Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
There's a high fly ball
from KMOX Sports.
That's hit deep to left field, and it's a gunner.
Big fly, Nolan Arenado. There's a moment for you.
Welcome to the Meyer Jensen Sports Open Line.
And the driving jam time.
And the Billikens win this one.
Meyer Jensen, a personal injury law firm, because sometimes the gloves have to come off. MeyerJensen.com.
Comeback pattern caught. Touchdown, Kansas City.
Now, Sports Open Line on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, Friday night on Sports Open Line, Kevin Wheeler, got my buddy Chris Ranji in, hanging out for these couple of hours. A lot of ground to cover, man. We're going to get some more lockout talk, some NFL playoffs. We are both going in on Kevin Demoff tonight. That's going to happen.
That's my guy.
Yeah, that's
going to
happen.
Kevin Demoff.
Oh, he let you think he was your guy back in the day. He's a little bit of a weasel.
You know what? I know some people like that.
Yeah.
They let you think they're into you. You're a good
dude. We like
dude.
You. We're not going anywhere.
Oh, no. I think you're great.
Yeah.
You're fantastic.
Yeah, we're going to get to Kevin Demoff today. I'm actually going to ask for some help. So you can get a jump start on this, on the Kevin Demoff story that we'll talk about later on. In case you missed it, what he did on Twitter a couple of days ago was, what a great day and date. What a great date, right? And he listed all these Rams things that have happened.
Yeah, January 12th.
Right, January 12th. Right. And they're all recent ones. Like, we moved to our home in L.A. and all this stuff. And we're going to talk a bit about what a DB he is. But I also want some help on the text line if you want to help. So 314-436-7900 is how you can text in. 314-436-7900. Just to see if you have any suggestions for what I need to tweet at him, because I've been holding back a tweet where I'm going to at Kevin Demoff and reply to his tweet. Because I just wanted to see if there's anything I didn't think of myself. So if anybody has like something, I'm not gonna go F bombs, Rank.
Okay, that's what I was gonna ask.
I may throw in an S bomb here or there, you know. I might do that, but I'm not gonna do the whole F bomb thing because I think it probably just it's a little too far.
For Twitter.
Oh, like,
for Twitter?
In person, it would be, like, totally appropriate.
Oh.
On the radio, it's a step too far. And, you know, on Twitter, because, you know, I'm a KMOX guy, probably not the right, you know.
Hey, listen, I think everybody listening, I'm going to guess 93% of the people listening, they love that word.
I love that
word. In their daily lives.
I love all the words.
They love it.
I love
and so
those
when
words.
They hear it and they go, oh, my word, how could you say something? I doubt it.
But, you know,
I'm
going to play it cautious. But you can use those on the text line if you'd like. I will censor your text.
Fine. Yeah. I love to use it on Twitter.
Yeah.
I'm a big bomb guy.
But you also, like, I'll explain later. We can get to that when we start talking about Demoff. I don't want to get too far off track now because I'm already starting to go down the road that I didn't mean to turn down till later.
We'll get there.
I need to stay on the main road right now. But we're going to get a few other things in as we go as well. I think we got a little bit on old guy action movies later on today. And I forget what else, but mostly it's going to be beating up on Kevin Demoff. And then right now we're going to start off with some baseball stuff and we'll see where that goes. So we talked a lot about, you know, the lockout and the two sides getting together yesterday. We talked a lot about how there are plenty of solutions to these problems, how there's no real reason for these things to get pushed up against deadlines, right? The owners know exactly what the players want. The players know exactly what the owners want. And I don't understand. We talked about this last night. I don't understand how you can't just be rational adults and say, let's just compromise now so that we don't have to disrupt everything and have our fans angry and tense and weird and upset our television partners who are also going to lose money if we don't play games on it. But I understand that's not how it works. But here's the thing that really, I thought about it last night after the show, Ron. What really bothers me about this whole thing is how much it just mirrors what happens in the real world in politics. How you have two different languages being spoken. And the only difference between what's happening with owners and players and what's happening in the regular world with the right and the left both screaming at each other and not speaking the same language is that there's a financial incentive that will eventually get these two sides in baseball to speak the same language. Eventually they will, because they'll both make money when they do.
I'm not sure that in real life we're ever going to resolve that issue.
No, that's my true. We're not going to.
Well, I don't know, man. I'm as
Are you
long
an optimist?
As optimist?
Yeah, like we're actually going to do that.
If there are reasons for optimism, yes. I do think that there are, while the media landscape is the way it is, there are too many safe harbor places for you to go that you can just continue to listen to the same talking points that you already agree with, and you're never going to hear opposing viewpoints. So I think in the real world, that's probably never going to get resolved as long as we have the media situation the way it is. In terms of baseball, they're going to have to, because there is a mutual destruction that can occur. And I know a lot of the people involved. In fact, none of the players involved were around in 1994. They're too
young.
Right,
right, right.
So, I mean, well, they might
remember.
Right. They might. Some of them might remember it, but none of them were playing during the time.
Yeah.
And you still have some of the same owners around, you know, coaches and managers and that sort of thing. Like,
but just think of it this way, though. The old guys, like Albert Pujols, for example, one of the oldest players in Major League Baseball.
He was not around.
He came up in 2000.
Yeah, he was not around for the lockout.
So unless these guys were paying attention to it when they were in, the old guys, when they were in junior high, then they don't really have this experience.
So they don't really know what it was like and how people felt about the sport. At that time, there was a considerable amount of anger. People were really, really mad. And most people were angrier at the players than anybody else. And I think times have changed a little bit, though there are still a lot of people that still blame the players. There aren't as many as there used to be. I think a lot of people are now, they know enough about compensation and what's going on because they know salaries, they know what teams make. So there are more people who understand, well, you know, the billionaire owners have something to say about all of this. It's not all the players just being greedy, but that used to be the talking point in the mid-90s. Players are greedy. The difference between now and then is that there could end up being apathy, and that's the worst place to be. I think people being mad at you is one thing. You don't want people to be mad at you. But you definitely don't want people to not care about you anymore.
Yeah.
And if baseball does this, and if the lockout were to hypothetically extend into the season, like well into it, and maybe wipe out the entire season, which I don't think is going to happen, you're going to have a lot of people just say, all right, well, whatever, I'll go do something else.
Yeah.
There are a lot of other things for me to worry about right now. So that's what's different now than what was happening in the mid-90s, and we don't want to go to that place.
No, we don't. All right, well, let's dig deeper into that in a second. I want to talk more about that element of the doomsday element of it, and you know where I wonder if things are just too safe in the sports world right now, and I'll explain what I mean by that. And I'm also gonna, you know, we just touched on the, you know, at least in sports, the two sides that hate each other and speak different languages have a financial incentive to agree. I might even throw out there next segment what incentive we could have for us to agree on normal world things like politics. Like, how do we get everybody speaking the same language?
I got to hear your ideas.
I have one. Okay. There's only one, and it might be the only one possible.
Okay.
Get to that with the baseball stuff next here on KMOX. All right, Chris Ronji, Kevin Wheeler hanging out with you on Sports Open Line. All right, we're going to start with the baseball thing, and then I'm going to tell you the one thing that can bring the craziest liberal people and the craziest conservative people to the table together to get them to speak the same language. That'll be the end of the segment. I'm saving that for the end. Because that's the payoff.
Is it like a medieval joust?
I'm not telling you. There's only one. There, in my opinion, though, there's only one thing that will do this, that will bring everybody, at least to the point where you're speaking the same language and acknowledging the same set of facts in the world.
Okay.
So I got that later. That's later.
I can't wait
that's gonna
to
happen,
hear this
That's going to happen in about 8 minutes. 7 or 8 minutes, we'll
can't
do that.
Can't wait.
First up, though, I want to get to this point that I made about why I think Major League Baseball, in particular the owners, but I do think this applies to the Players Association to a degree as well. I almost wonder if they're too safe right now, that they don't feel this risk that you and I were talking about of alienating fans and anything because of the guaranteed television deals and because sports still dominate TV. So no matter how much you piss off the TV networks, they're
right.
not going to kick you to the side because the TV shows are still dominated by sports. Now, we talked the other day about the NFL, right? Like 91 of the top 100 shows last year were NFL
football.
Games. But on any given night during baseball season, the highest rated show
locally.
In any particular market locally is the baseball team. It's like 26 out of 30 baseball markets. They're the highest rated TV show on a nightly basis in their market. So the TV money comes from the regional sports outlets doing that, and of course the national ones too. Do you think that maybe it's just too comfortable? Because this is how the Pirates can sit back and be terrible for 30 years and still make money. It's how the Marlins can do that. Everything else. Is there not enough fear of survival in the baseball world to think that, wow, if we do this wrong, we could actually get our asses beat?
It's a really interesting idea because you would think if there's some foresight on the part of the owners and knowing that Rob Manfred is the owner's, basically, he's their spokesperson. He's their attorney.
Also known as Bobo.
Bobo?
He's their Bobo.
Oh. What is a Bobo?
It's just what it
like
sounds
a, like.
It's a sidekick.
Punching
it's a sidekick. It's the toady. It's the guy that'll just do whatever.
That's the word for sidekick?
That's one of the words.
I've never heard that
it's
before.
It's a great word, though.
Okay. Well, I'm glad
don't
I said. Yeah.
Like if you say, like, you know, like Kevin Demoff is Stan's Bobo.
Oh, okay.
You get the idea, right?
Yeah. I would have said Bubby, like a little blanket. Like a little baby blanket.
I thought that was a whoopee.
Oh, it's a whoopee.
Yeah.
Yeah, you might be right.
Yeah. All right, so.
What was
ahead.
I saying?
I don't remember. Sorry.
It doesn't matter anyway.
No, you're talking about the safety in the contracts and whether or not they have the, whether or not there's enough fear of God in owners and players. Like, it's just is it too comfortable?
No, I think, the stuff that Manfred has tried to do, and we talked about this either last night or the night before, with the pace of play stuff and, you know, the pitch clocks and all of those ideas, the runner at second and all of that stuff, there's clearly a concern on the part of the owner's side, and Manfred is on the owner's side here, that long-term, down the road, maybe you'll lose people. Maybe you'll lose a younger generation of fan because they're just, you know, just too slow, too boring, whatever. Whatever the arguments are. And I think a lot of younger people might make those arguments. Kids might do that. I don't speak to a lot of children, but I'm assuming that there are kids who do feel that way about baseball. So maybe there is some of that, but I think in the near short term, there isn't enough of that fear that we're going to lose a generation of fans because we have the money right now.
Let me add this part. How many of these owners are even going to be alive
that's the
in
one
that
I'm
next generation? Right? Like, that's not their concern.
Right. I mean, you've got a younger ownership group in Miami.
Yeah.
So they'll be around for a while.
Yep.
Ricketts is fairly young, but he's not like a dude who's 80. You know, he's not Jerry Reinsdorf who's pushing 90.
Right. And it's not just, I mean, it is partly that, right? Because if you're of a certain age, you're not really worried about 25 years from now.
Right.
You're not going to be there. And even if you are there, you're going to be at the point of your life where you're not really worried
unless
about that anymore.
Unless you're concerned about the state of the sport when you leave the team to your kids.
I don't think there are enough of the people that actually care about the sport.
I agree with you. I think that there's not enough concern. And for whatever reason, I don't know why people haven't thought about the 90s enough. Because it does matter now. I think if you look at it within context, if you look at how people felt about the sport then and the fact they took forever to come back to it, maybe they don't feel like the backlash would be as bad as it was then the next time around. The people are too distracted. Again, there's a lot of apathy, I think. People are too distracted with, there's a lot of serious stuff going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe there's a comfort in knowing that, hey, as bad as this baseball situation is, general life is a whole lot worse.
We still got the COVID cover.
You remember, I mean, you remember what you talked about a couple of weeks ago, that the 90s, there was nothing going on. Like, people were...
Oh, my God, 90s
were like
surplus,
just... everybody was happy.
Yeah, everybody's, you know? Yeah, it's just chilling.
So if you wanted to be mad about something, you got to be mad about baseball.
Yeah.
It's different now. Now there's you're not too worried about it. So maybe that's what they're thinking about.
You throw that in with the fact that their TV deals are guaranteed, right?
Yep.
So for the short term, your TV deals are guaranteed. And by 4 or 5 years down the road, when you're getting to those next TV deals, well, then you're past the labor stuff and everybody's happy again and people are watching. So now those TV guys are going to give you even more money. And I'm not even saying any of this is a bad thing. I'm not saying it's bad to have security, but I do think it's partly why both sides are willing to be a little bit more risky, why they're willing to play chicken with the season as opposed to get together. Because no matter what, you're protected with the TV money. So once you come back, the TV money's there.
Well,
and you know you're going to come back. You mean, you know that. You don't know when it's going to be. You don't know if it's going to be, you know, March 1st, April 1st, July 1st. You have but you know that when you come back, the TV money's there.
TV money is going to be there because, as you addressed, the fact that over 90% of the most popular programs on a given night on television are sports, and, well, football. But sports, in general.
Even locally, though, the regional sports outlets dominate with baseball.
Yeah, and so the TV networks are going to chase what makes them money.
Yeah.
So even if baseball takes a year off...
They're not going to, but right.
Right. They won't, correct. But even
hopefully,
if they did... Well,
yeah. A little worried.
I'm worried about the start of the season. I think they're going to play games this year. I just don't know how many. But I do believe that there's that concern, but it's minimal because they know that everybody's going to come back, and once they do come back, their moneymaker, they're going to jump right on top of
it. One thing they did learn from the 90s is a lot of people that said that they were walking out the door forever came back.
But I think a lot of things had to happen in order to get that.
No,
maybe
right.
it would have happened anyway
it
without the home run chase.
It was starting to before 98. If you look at the tracking on the attendance, because I was doing this at the time, it was, you know, the attendance stunk in 95 when they first came back.
Yeah.
And then in 96, it went up a little bit. And then 97, it went up a little bit. But it still wasn't back to pre-strike numbers. We weren't there yet. And then obviously 98, the beginning of the year was still decent. But not, it was getting better, but not like it was in the second half when it exploded, when people realized that McGuire and Sosa were actually making this run.
So I made the argument earlier that the worst place for baseball to be, or any sport, is apathy.
Yep.
Fan apathy.
Yep. Anger is okay.
But there's a caveat here. Maybe in a situation like this in the short term, apathy is okay. Because... The apathy...
For now, at this moment.
Yes, for this moment. When I say apathy, I mean people don't give a crap
about
your sport anymore.
They're just ignoring it. Yeah,
they're done with your sport. They don't care. They're doing other stuff. That you don't want. Short-term apathy might be okay. What you don't want is short-term anger. Because if you're getting short-term anger from people, they ain't coming back because they're mad at you. And I don't think people are generally mad about the baseball situation right now because of the things we talked about a moment ago.
Yeah, yeah. And obviously, they could still play opening day on time, right? If the season opens on March 31st as scheduled, nobody's going to care about any of this moving forward.
Well, maybe the reason they don't care now is because there is still a little bit of time between now and then.
Yeah.
Maybe there would be actual anger if we get into the middle of March and nothing's done.
All right. You ready?
For your solutions?
You ready for the bomb? No, there's only one.
Solution?
So we set I set this up earlier in the show that the frustrating thing about these baseball talks is that it doesn't seem like players and owners want to speak the same language, but they have the financial incentive to eventually get there, right? They will get there because there's money on the line. Our regular world is like that too. You've got Republican side, Democrat side, they don't speak the same language at all. I'm arguing that there may not even be a good connection to say that we're the same species at this point, the way that the world has two different sets of reality. And I think there's only one way that we're going to get, in any time that I can foresee here soon, that we could get the two political sides speaking the same language and looking towards a common goal.
All right. I'm here to hear it.
Aliens.
Oh, for the love of God.
If aliens invade and we are at risk of being exterminated, I think then we might have a common goal and speak a common language and actually, well, I don't know, stop being ridiculous. So it's going to take beings from another planet, maybe even another solar system, galaxy, if you will, to show up in a hostile way, by the way, because if they're friendly, we're just going to fight about how to handle them. You know, like,
no.
do we give them a place to stay, or do we kick their asses back out to space? If they're hostile, though, we won't have any choice. We're going to have to team up to fight them.
Let's talk about this after the break.
Okay.
I got some.
You think there's a flaw in this?
Maybe a little.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, the first flaw is they're not coming here.
Well, stop.
Let's talk about this.
Let's talk about
it
next. I think you're misunderestimating.
And I think you're out of your mind.
Well, I mean, we knew that. Come on. We're going to talk about aliens next on KMOX.
High fly ball.
Welcome back to the Meyer Jensen Sports Open Line.
And it's a gutter.
Big fly, Nolan Arenado.
Meyer Jensen, a personal injury law firm, because sometimes the gloves have to come off. MeyerJensen.com.
And the Billikens win this one.
Touchdown, Kansas City.
On America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, Chris Rodgy, Kevin Wheeler with you here. Obviously, solving the world's problems. We talked a lot of the baseball side of things here. I floated the idea before our last break, and I think it's a flawless observation that the only thing that could potentially bring all people together, you know, because, I mean, it does feel like, Ronge, wouldn't you agree that, like, people are, like, there's two different worlds. There are two different universes existing at the same time. Like, people do not see the same set of facts and the same set of circumstances. Like, we know this is how the world of politics is right now, right? In the U.S. I mean, it's this way elsewhere, too, but I don't care about that. I don't live there. Well, I care about it, just less. But you see what I was, my line was, you know, like, the only thing, and it's a way of saying, I don't think there is anything that can actually bring people together at this point, except for alien invasion. And a hostile one, not just a friendly one, because a friendly one, we'd just be back to fighting in a few days.
Well,
if it's a hostile one, we got to fight them instead of fighting each other. I think that would bring people together, make all of these other differences irrelevant, and we'd be like, wow, boy, were we stupid about fighting all that stuff.
Number of things that I would think that come to mind here with your
doctrine
proposal.
Doctrine.
Is it a doctrine? This is an idea.
It's the Wheeler Doctrine.
It's an idea that you've had.
It's the Wheeler Doctrine.
That you are welcoming an alien invasion.
Not welcoming.
No, you are, because you think, yes.
Well, because we'll lose. I don't want that to happen.
Do you want us to come together? Do you want us to, as a society, be on the same side?
I do. I just don't think it's going to happen.
Well,
unless,
but then the only way to do it is for an alien invasion to happen.
Yeah. And by the way, not even the end of the world's going to do it, because we disagree on how the world is going.
So that's what I was going to say, is, first of all, alien life is not coming here.
Why?
Well, there's a thing called a super civilization.
Prove
you'd
it.
Have to have. Well, that you'd have to have a super civilization close enough. And this is a civilization that can harness the power of, you know, the sun and the solar system.
How old
and the
is the universe?
Infinite
billions, right? Billions
yeah,
of years. So
know,
there are societies that could be billions of years ahead of us.
Yeah.
And we can get
the
space.
But if there are, they're probably not close enough to go out of their way to come here. Okay,
you know?
That's number one.
How do you know?
I don't know. That's just an assumption. I could be totally wrong.
Do wormholes exist?
Oh my God,
or not?
What's that in the sky? But then I just watched Don't Look Up on Netflix.
I didn't watch that yet. Good?
All right. It is very good.
Okay.
And you're watching it and you're going, yep, this all sounds right. This all sounds right. And basically,
I mean, the movie that proves my theory is Independence Day.
Okay, no, well, Independence Day is different. All of mankind comes together.
Right.
In this, and this doesn't really give away the point it doesn't give away the end of the movie, but in Don't Look Up, basically, there is a comet headed toward Earth, and we know it for a fact.
Mm-hmm.
It is on the way, and it is going to impact, and it is going to kill everybody. And there's half the country like, no, let's not pretend that's a real problem.
That's different, though, than the problem being right in your face.
Well, but it is.
No, it's like, not. You can't see it.
There's evidence. Yes,
but
they have photos, and they have evidence. Like, that's coming at us.
Right. Like,
no.
But if you said that to me, I can't look in the sky and see it.
So okay,
I'm not saying I agree with those people. I'm saying that there are people that can say, "Listen, I can't see this thing,
Yeah. All it will take.
But if you got a green dude in front of you with a laser and he's pointing it at your head, that's pretty real.
Well, here's what would happen. There'd probably be one half of the media landscape that would say they're really here for our benefit, you know, and then
we'd get the split, right?
And then we get the split. Like, no matter what, it's impossible for us to come together, even if reality is slapping us in the face,
yeah.
which it has been for years, mm-hmm. absolutely punching us right in the nose. And we're like, nah, that's not real. I'm seeing is not what I'm seeing. It's not real. And I think that's how we would react.
Yeah. I'm not saying it would automatically go well. I'm saying that's the only thing I could see doing it. In other words, I don't see it happening. That's kind of my point. Like, I don't see this big unification ever, not the way things are now, not the way you mentioned it earlier, the way that people are in their bubbles. And, you know, even though somebody like me, I might try to not be in one, I'm in my own bubble, right? I mean, I don't know exactly how it aligns with other people, but we all are in some way. And there was, I can't remember if it was MIT, it was some other school where smart people go. They studied social media patterns and they showed these two giant circles and there was no overlap between the two political sides. There was like they were the two little circles come together. It was like they touched briefly and then just spread apart again. Like, most people do not cross over. There are people who do, but most do not. And I'm saying that, and I'm not crazy. I am crazy, but I'm not the only person to say this kind of thing. I mean, Ronald Reagan said this same thing in 1987. He wasn't talking about political divide in the U.S.
because it wasn't that bad then.
That's the scary part. But you right. know why? Because, you know, we had a common enemy.
Oh, the
Soviet Union.
Well,
and that's what he was talking about. He said, perhaps we need some outside universal threat to make us recognize the common bond. And I said, I occasionally think how quickly our differences worldwide would vanish if we were facing an alien threat from outside this world.
Right. So, but the 80s were different. People were more likely to get together. Pretty much
anytime. There were fewer sources to get information.
Anytime up until maybe like once the Iraq War, the 2003 one
yeah.
started, once we were deep into that for a while and we realized it was kind of a mistake, then I think things started to diverge. But most people were on board with the idea of going after whoever, right? Like in the country, there were a lot of people who pushed back against it. Right, but they wanted to go after somebody.
Right.
Yes,
right.
But
not anybody. I think most people wanted, because like, there's no benefit to just getting someone. You want to get the people that actually did it, because that's the only way there's payback.
I agree with you, but that's not how a lot of people see it. Just look at any time somebody, an awful murder happens, and I guess most murders are awful. All murders are awful. Don't do them. But when something like that happens, people just want blood. And even if they've got the wrong guy, they want that person hanged. They want that person executed.
Not if they know it's the wrong person, though.
Well, if there's uncertainty,
right.
or but there are enough people convincing right. you this is the guy. Trust us, this
That's
is the
true.
Guy.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know, so I do think that
some excited prosecutor who you know just wants
yeah,
to get a verdict,
who just whatever. Wants to get it done.
Right.
They want to get it cleared.
Right.
And yeah, I think that's probably where we would head.
So finally, to close.
And I was going to say something else, and I totally forgot.
You did?
Yeah. I don't know what
you
it
want,
was.
You want like 30 seconds to think about it?
No. 30 seconds of silence, and I'll see what I can come up with.
Well, I mean, I was going to say some random words so as to not distract you from your thought.
I don't remember.
How about
now.
This?
Yeah.
Just, again,
if I think of it, I'll let you know.
Boiling it down. Do you think
aliens are coming?
That, no. That's not what I'm saying. I don't think they're coming either. Do you think if hostile aliens showed up today that people would actually just be like, yeah, we don't hate each other anymore. Let's get these guys.
No, I think there would still be. 40-50% of the country that would
you don't have any time to go to your favorite.
We can't even.
How about this? I'm going to go even further. They block out all of our communication. They knock out the satellites. They take out so no TV, internet goes down. What do you think? All of us that are just we're all here. We're in the street. We're in our neighborhoods. We're what are we doing?
We're looting each other's homes. That's probably
while
what's happening.
We're being attacked.
Yeah, yeah probably.
No, we're
I'm going to get this TV. This will all be over tomorrow. That's a really nice TV, and I want it. We're going to be fine in a week or two. We can't even agree on who are. We have a common enemy, and then 30% of the people are like, "Oh, that guy looks great with his shirt off." You know, like we can't even.
What?
A Putin. You know, look at this guy riding a horse with his shirt off.
He was riding a bear.
A bear?
No, I'm kidding. Okay, there is a Photoshop picture of him riding a bear. It's pretty funny.
That's right. I did see that.
Shirtless on a bear.
I think that it would take maybe an alien invasion, but I still think there'd be a lot of people that would keep up the grift and try to find a reason the aliens aren't that bad.
As a child of the 80s, it's remarkable to me that we hate each other more than we hate a guy like Putin. I mean, there are the t-shirts. Well, like, I'd rather be, you know, I'd rather be Russian than a Democrat. No, you wouldn't.
Yeah.
No, you wouldn't. Yeah. You wouldn't want to live there. And by the way, you could probably move there.
Oh, you probably could. It's really cold.
I wouldn't move there.
It's cold. It looks, it doesn't look, it looks gray.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a I'm sure there's nice spots.
I would like to go and see it.
I'm sure there's nice spots. Yeah, I would. I'd visit pretty much anywhere. Cool. All right. I got more baseball. I got one more baseball thing. This is not quite as serious as solving the world's problems. I want to talk a quick thing. We'll take us a few minutes about Yadier Molina, which is interesting to me because here's a player entering his last year. He's 40 years old, and yet national baseball analysts still see him as amongst one of the best at his position, which is a unique thing, especially at that position. We'll hit that next up on KMOX. All right, being a little bit more serious, sports serious, for this segment on KMOX, Chris Ronji, Kevin Wheeler hanging out with you. After the 7 o'clock news, we're going in on Kevin Demoff, so if you want to get any give me any suggestions or throw in any thoughts on that. 314-436-7900 is how you can text us. And I may include some of those texts in my eventual tweet to one Kevin Demoff.
Oh, my gosh. I think all forms of language should be on the table.
Maybe they will be.
Except for, like, you know, slurs.
No slurs.
That's it. That's the only thing that's off limits.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to do.
But swears are okay.
Apps 100%.
Okay, so we'll throw some swears in there just for good form. I teased the Yadier Molina thing, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, Ronj, but I think everybody that has followed his career kind of understands and recognizes the greatness that you've seen, right? I mean, what a catcher does is by far the toughest job on the baseball field, and it's tougher the older you get. And to see that, you know, sure, the offensive numbers have come down a little bit, which is expected when you're 40. Some things defensively are not what they used to be. I mean, he's not quite as quick as he used to be, which, again, not surprising. But even now, even coming into his last year, his age 40 season, you've got people out there like Buster Olney ranking him as one of the top 10 catchers in the sport. I mean, it says a lot, number one, about him, but also about how different he and his generation of catchers are to the ones that are being played now, not because of anything wrong with the newer generation of catchers, but because of how teams are using them, right? Teams are using them more in tandems now. In part because of the physical wear and tear, they probably feel like there's more offensive production and some guys are better with certain pitchers than others and they start to figure those things out. But this is a guy that even at this stage, his last year, he's coming into the year as a Gold Glove finalist the year before and a guy that will be, not by everybody and not by every metric, but he will be viewed by a lot of people as a top 10 guy at his position.
Well, it's unusual and I think this trend has been going on for a while that a lot of teams, if you're a really good hitter and they see you coming up through the minor leagues, they would, if they believe you've got a special bat, they're going to try to get you away from that position because they want to increase the longevity of your career.
Most prominent example of that recently is probably Bryce Harper.
Yeah, it's a really good example.
Who was a catcher in high school. I mean, he played other things too, but he was a catcher and they were like, yeah, no, we drafted you to hit, so you're not going to catch anymore.
And there are a lot of teams that see a ton of value in splitting up the time with catchers, like you said, because keep the fresher you can keep them, the better they're going to produce for you. And right now, for a catcher, the most important job they have, and this could change and will change, I think, to an extent, when we get the automated strike zone. But the best thing a catcher can do now is work with the pitching staff, whether it's the sequencing of pitching or it's pitch framing, which, again, will be a skill that is out the door once we get to the automated strike zone.
I would tell you that right now, framing is one of the most overrated evaluations because they change a lot from year to year, and there's stuff that goes into that that has nothing to do with the catcher. You know, is this particular umpire that you have on a given
day, is he prone to call those?
Is he prone to call those? But also, who's the pitcher? Greg Maddux is going to get a call that a rookie's not going to get. Who's the hitter? You're going to call that borderline pitch on Mike Trout? Probably not, but you'll call it on some nobody. But you know, there's a lot that goes into that that can't be assigned to what the catcher's doing.
But it does matter, though, at times. I mean, let's think about let's think about a big at-bat. How big of an at-bat is it when you've got runners in scoring position? And this is not something that's totally infrequent. I mean, you do see this happen a good amount. When you've got a first and second situation, you're down by a run, you've got a hitter at the plate with a 1-1 count, doesn't get the benefit of a call, and then it's 2-1. There's a huge difference between, as you know, 2-1 and 1-2. That changes the entire at-bat.
It's a 100-150-point swing in batting average and on base.
Absolutely. So the framing does matter in those
moments. Let me paint a specific scenario for you. Okay. Yeah. So Yadier Molina's behind the plate. Vintage Adam Wainwright is on the mound. And Juan Soto's at the plate. What factors are now in play for whether or not that call is going to be made or not?
Well, it's all those things.
Well, that's
it's
the problem.
Young hitter.
That's the problem when it comes to like evaluating framing on a large scale.
Right.
I mean, you can say, and I can, like, for example, I can watch a guy, whether it's Molina or Jacob Stallings or anybody else, they can do the right thing technique wise. They can be in the right position. They can start below the ball, work up to the ball, bring it into the zone. They can do it exactly right and still not get the call. So they don't get credit, even though they just did it exactly right.
But there are so many guys who are so bad at it that it's apparent that those borderline pitches, like if he...
Gary Sanchez has been pretty bad at this as an example.
Like if he were to just... When I say, oh, bro, what am I? Am I 15? Like catching a ball in such a swipe of the glove, right? Instead of holding it where it needs to be and just framing it perfectly on that corner, you probably lose a lot of strikes for your pitcher just doing that because the visual for the home plate umpire is
outside. Sometimes you do that and you still get the call.
Sometimes, yeah.
And that's the part of it that makes it difficult.
It may not be the biggest deal, but it does matter. It's one of the. It's right now. It's one of the factors that does matter for a catcher. I'm just saying that at some point it's going to be completely irrelevant.
At some point
when we get the automated strike zone, that's out.
And you know what's going to matter then? Just whether they can hit or not, because nobody steals. I mean, you know, like you look at Molina as an example, right? Nobody runs on him ever. They never have, He's had the fewest stolen bases against him than any catcher during his career, right? Like, the Cardinals have had the fewest stolen base attempts against them since the day Molina walked into the major leagues between now and then.
Yeah.
Well, he's a deterrent. He deters that, and he still throws out 40%, which is insane.
Well,
because, 25% is average and 40% is ridiculous. But even with that, where the average is at 25%, people don't run. They don't run on anybody else either with any frequency.
Yeah, it's just across the game now.
Yeah.
But there could be a market inefficiency where teams will start to exploit that, moving the runners more often.
I hope so. They're wasting opportunities.
Yeah, there's more action that way. Just from a perspective of watching.
Have we been talking about more action?
Yes.
In baseball?
Yeah, it matters.
You think that could help?
Yeah.
I think so, too.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to be stupid about running into outs.
Yeah.
But... There's action.
You know, stealing a base is a 75% success rate, so we should be doing a little bit more of that.
I would agree.
Hang tight. Kevin Demoff's going to get a punch in the face next on KMLX.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At-Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.